Welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing. Who wants to guess?
Oh, at
12:15 a.m. Eastern on Monday morning. Joining me from New York City, where he and I just drove up from Philadelphia after covering today's 76ers Celtics game four, is Tim Bontemps.
How we doing?
Long time no see. He dropped me off at the hotel about 10 minutes ago. Joining us from the Footprint Center, back after a brief but dearly missed hiatus, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hope you guys miss me. Just not
too
the
close
same
to
without
the mic.
Me.
Huh? Too close to the mic.
Oh, whoa. Hey.
It's always better when Ben
McMahon whisper in Phoenix, I hear.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, we were the collective. We were at a bunch of good basketball games today. Where do we want to start? Should we start with the night game or the afternoon game, Bontemps?
Let's start with this Suns Nuggets game.
Well, it was only like McMahon. It was only like the fifth time, or maybe not the fifth time, but the fifth player in history to have a 50-10 playoff game, and that's what Nikola Jokic did in the loss tonight.
Yeah, it was incredible. Monty Williams afterward basically said, "I thought we played pretty good defense on him. You know, nothing was easy." And then there he is with 53 and 11 or whatever it was. But man, Booker is just in a ridiculous group. Booker has scored 47 and 36 in the last two games and missed a combined 9 shots from the floor. This guy's in one of the most ridiculous shot-making grooves that I've ever seen. Plus, he dished out 20 assists in those two games. Basically, with Chris Paul out, he's essentially running point and lighting the world on fire. And then this was by far Kevin Durant's best performance of the series. And, you know, KD, frankly, hadn't played up to his ridiculously high standards in this series until tonight. But, I mean, this is why the Suns, you can't count the Suns out no matter how much they lack depth. Even if Chris Paul's hurt, as long as they have KD and Booker, they're going to have a chance because, you know, these guys, we can argue about they're two of the top whatever players, but like it's a single digit number, I think, as far as where these guys rank in the league.
Let me just read some Devin Booker stats from our guy Stats Williams. In the postseason, Devin Booker is shooting 78% in the restricted area, 68% in the paint, 61% from mid-range, and 51% from three. Over games 3 and 4, Devin Booker has gone 20 for 26 on jump shots. That is the highest field goal. He shot 77%. That is the highest field goal percentage on jumpers over a 2-game span in the playoffs over the past 10 seasons with a minimum of 25 attempts. There have been over 900 instances of a player taking 25 or more jumpers over a 2-game span over the past 10 years, and that is by far the best shooting performance. He has just been absolutely unbelievable in the playoffs. The only guy who you can argue as playoff MVP over him at this point is Jimmy Butler, given the way Jimmy Butler has played. Otherwise, Devin Booker has been truly incredible.
Well, as you guys know, Butler missed a game, so he's invalid for winning any award.
Oh, wow. Listen, if we're gonna do whining, we got to whine and try to get Joker suspended because we got a bunch of crybabies. Oh my gosh, he nudged the billionaire who flopped like a freaking. I mean, give me a break.
On.
Do they teach flopping classes at Michigan State?
Too fast.
What are we doing here?
Hold on, just in case people
everyone
didn't
knows
see
what I'm
it.
Talking about.
No, I don't want to assume that people wake up in the morning. They didn't stay up late. That's what we do for them. Was it the second quarter, McMahon? I didn't
second
see it
quarter,
live.
I do believe. Yes, it was.
Okay. Ball goes out of bounds in the corner, basically right into Matt Ishbia, the brand new owner of the Phoenix Suns seats. Josh Okogie goes crashing in to his colleagues, or whoever is there as his guests. He inherited, since he bought the team midseason, he inherited Robert Sarver's seats. Mm-hmm. So Matt Ishbia sits where Robert Sarver did, and he had two people with him, and then to his immediate right was Isaiah Thomas, who's a close friend of his. So the ball, Okoji ends up in some guy's laps. And what I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, McMahon, is that I think Jokic sees Okoji like laying on the ground, sort of incapacitated. He wants the ball to inbound it to get a
He wants to go. Right. Yeah.
But he can't inbound it because
the billionaire has the ball.
Matt Ishbia is holding onto the ball.
Jokic tries to grab the ball. Ishbia, he's like, you know, it's a loose ball now. Like he's trying to, you know, he's not going to let
He's back to his Michigan State player days. He was on the end of the bench.
Michigan State and, practice days.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what he did. And he throws the ball like where Jokic can't get it. He throws the ball into, you know, a row back. And Jokic goes to sort of try to fetch it. And he comes kind of chest to chest with Ishbia and pushes him back. And
I want to say nudged.
Okay. Fair.
I think nudged. Pushes. He gave him a little, you know,
he cleared his personal space.
After Ishbia put his hands on him, I will also add.
There was contact there. And then Ishbia, oh my goodness. I mean, boy, you talk about really selling the contact. I mean, fell back through the hands. Whoa, baby.
This Marcus Smart level flopping to get to the direction of the game we're talking about later.
I'm surprised the chair didn't fall down. Boy, just without
I that thought part. It was, I'm sure nobody. I'm sure other people did, but maybe nobody involved. I thought it was hilarious. When I saw the video, hilarious. I was laughing so hard and mostly just laughing at Ishbia. Like, I'm going to tell you something. Draymond Green, fellow Michigan State alum. I don't know if he graduated. I think he graduated. Had to be impressed by seeing that flop.
Yes.
And it was hilarious. And he was trying to get Jokic busted, trying to get him in trouble.
And he did. Jokic got teed up. Joker got teed up. Tony Burr.
That point mattered down the stretch of the game.
Hey, Devin Booker said about Ishbia, he said he did his job over there. He got us a point. Said he hadn't watched the film, hadn't seen the video of the play. And then I did inform him, you know, as a thorough reporter that he flopped. But listen, that's why you flop. You flop to get the call. He got the call. So, I mean, job well done. It's not an insult that he flopped, but this idea that the league, oh my gosh, they're going to suspend Joker. Give me a break. If they do that, come on, man.
It would be reprehensible if the NBA suspends Nikola Jokic for this. Absolutely reprehensible. It should not, nothing. If you want to fine him a little bit because he touched Ishbia, fine. Ishbia started this entire thing. He's not a fan. I don't want to hear nonsense about how this is a fan. He's not a fan. He is part of the Suns.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this Jokic, is not a big deal. Did Jokic say after the game whether he knew who he was?
Yeah, but he kept referring to him as the fan. And I think that was intentional. And here's a quote. The fan had his hands on me first, so I thought the league was supposed to protect us.
Which he did.
Yeah. And you know what? But listen, to me, it was a funny moment that I'm sure annoyed the hell out of Joker and the Nuggets. But as Bontemps said before we started recording, it was a funny moment that shouldn't take away from this was a freaking unbelievable basketball game.
Ding, ding, ding.
Let's just hope that if there's any other additional action, it's a fine and not anything crazy. Because
we've been pretty bad on our league office ruling predictions on this pod this year.
So. I agree. I didn't think Draymond was going to get. I didn't think Draymond was going to get suspended. So, all right. So one of the things that happened in this game. McMahon is the bench, which has obviously been one of the storylines of the whole playoffs. The Phoenix bench just being able to give nothings, particularly in the way of scoring. It arrived mostly in the form of Landry Shamet, who finally had a good shooting game. He's been in a slump for weeks, hit five out of eight threes, scored 19 points, most of them in the second half.
Also played really good defense against Jamal Murray, which was critical because that means they don't have to ask Booker to do that, for 40 plus minutes.
Yeah, they still played Durant 44, but,
Right.
They got to do what they got to do, I guess. I mean, I just remember the last time Durant was playing this minute load was in 2019. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to.
Jock Landale had another really good performance, not necessarily, you know, 8 and 5, 8 rebounds or 8 points, 5 assists, but a plus 16 in 21 minutes. He's a guy who has basically gone from totally out of the rotation to playing a key role in these two wins. So, you know, Monty Williams is still like, they don't have a set rotation. They're outside of Booker and KD who are going to play the vast majority of the minutes. There's a whole lot of searching still. There's a whole lot of trying to figure things out on the fly.
Torrey Craig was like maybe their third best player in the last series. He didn't play tonight.
He played 7 seconds.
Okay, you're right, 7 seconds.
But he did not have as big an impact on this game as Matt Ishbia.
Look, they had 50 bench points combined over the first three games, and today they had 40.
Yeah, and it was a bad game for the Nuggets bench, which has been a big advantage for them all series long until now. But like, they had 11 bench points. Bruce Brown is, you know, he didn't really make an imprint on this game. Christian Brown, they pulled the plug on him pretty early. But it was still a game down to the end because Joker, oh my God, the dude had 53 and yeah. I mean,
53 and 11.
The shots he makes, you know, KD was like, I hate it when he hits shots because they're so unorthodox. You think it's going to be a miss. And then he friggin' makes it and he makes it look easy. I mean, just like this guy at 7 foot, 200, I don't know what, 75, 80, whatever it is, like he's just hitting teardrop 14 footers with guys draped all over him. And, you know,
he just makes the whole court look like it's smaller. It's like you're playing with your kid. You're playing with a small ball, you can palm it and you can manipulate it and you can make every shot because everything's smaller. He just maneuvers the ball and puts it in like he's a giant. And
well, here's another stat. Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray scored or assisted on 102 points in this game. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant scored or assisted on 101 points in this game. It's the first time in the last 25 playoffs that
I mean, there two, it was an two it was NBA Jam.
Do that. It really
it was basically plus. NBA Jam, 2-on-2, and it just unbelievable. Like some of the plays, I mean, you're just shaking your head at some of these shots these guys are hitting.
Some of these give and goes that Jamal Murray and Jokic operate, where Murray will come down the floor, give it to Jokic, and then just, you know, one of the great two-man games of all time is watching Steph and Draymond work together, where Steph just sort of invents where he's going and Draymond figures it out. Like, this is the mastery is almost the exact same.
Well, and Joker's making passes in small little windows.
Oh,
and
God, that's crazy.
I forgot who was that one of the sons was talking after or between the games. And he was talking about, you know, he's so tall that you're worried about the passing windows up here, up high. You got to get your hands high, keep your hands high. Then he's throwing these crazy bounce passes through traffic. I mean, some of these passes, like,
well, that pass of game three to Aaron Gordon on the cut in the lane when he threw that bounce pass, like, I thought for sure it was going to be a turnover, and it just like snaked right in front. Gordon caught, like, he just does stuff that you can't even imagine.
And it's like he's throwing the ball, and it's basically saying, hey, go there. Like, he's telling guys by where he's passing, you know, where they need to be going. And like, obviously, Murray's got a great feel playing off of him. You know, Gordon has really developed a nice feel playing off him. He's so fun to watch.
He is the best. Well, I don't say the best because then somebody will come up with something and all. He is the best bounce passer I've ever seen. The best diagonal passer I've ever seen.
Ooh, let's just make it simple. He's the best. He's
get
the
mad
best
at that one.
He's the best big man passer of all time, period.
No question.
And then you want to talk about beyond that, there's debates.
Yeah.
Because he's that good.
And he scored 53 tonight on 67% shooting.
Yeah, 20 for 30 shooting. Yeah. And
that's
if
the
you
thing,
foul,
this,
he makes his foul shots. He's 11 for 13 from the foul line. He does everything.
That's the thing. The Suns' offense is so incredible when those two guys are going. But the burden on them is so high. You know, they put up 129. I'd be stunned if they get this much bench production again in this series. Maybe they will.
That's,
I don't know.
That's the thing. I mean, they won this game because of Landry Shamet. And yeah. like for as good as Booker and Durant were, this is what we've been talking about, right? They need other guys, especially with Chris Paul out, to step up and make plays. And Landry Shamet going 5 for 8 from three. I think he hit at least 4, if not all 5 of those threes in the fourth quarter. I think it was 4 of them. But I mean, those shots were gigantic shots because every time Denver's going down and Jokic is scoring, and it was Landry Shamet who kept them ahead down the stretch. And like, if they're going to win 2 more games in this series, they're going to need, whether it's him or Terrence Ross or some of these other guys, campaign, DeAndre Ayton's got to give them more than 8 points in 27 minutes. Like, they're going to need some of these other guys to make shots. Cause look, I mean, maybe Devin Booker's going to go 14 for 18 and score 36 points every single game, but it's asking an awful lot for KD and Book to combine to score 72 points on 25 for 37 shooting. Like, if they got to do that 3 more times this series, as good as they are, I don't know if they'll be able to pull that off.
Do 2 more times.
Well, sure, twice more. Fair.
Well, I'll just say this.
It's a high burden to ask them to do it twice more, but they're good enough. They just might.
I mean, they had 86 last game. Not as efficient. Not as efficient by KD, at least, but.
Jokic,
Booker, 53. It's unbelievable.
Jokic's 53 points are the most in regulation in a loss in playoff history. And that is a commentary, not just on Jokic, but on the Suns. Because basically what they're saying is that a performance like this is almost unrecoverable, unovercomable in any game in playoff history. But that's how good Durant and Booker were to overcome that.
And Durant and Booker, 158 points during these 2 games at home to tie the series up. That is the most ever by a duo in a pair of 2 straight playoff wins. The only duo to score more in 2 straight playoff games was Michael Jordan with a little bit of help from Orlando Woolridge. And those were the first 2 games of the 86 series that they got swept by the Celtics. So,
right, when he had 63 and
49 and then 63. And then yeah. Woolridge had 27 in both games. But I mean, and again, KD, by his standards, had yet to play well until today. Because like 12 of 31, you don't see KD have inefficient shooting nights very often. Now, he got to the line a ton, so he got his 39 points. But, you know, this was one where, you know, he's got to line 13 times, 11 of 19 from the floor. He also did a nice job distributing 6 assists. He rebounded well. This was, this was like a classic KD type of performance.
So the other big swing stat in that game too, we talked about earlier in the series, Suns had 29 3-point attempts. Nuggets only had 22. Like, and KD and Booker combined to go 5 for 8. Like, that's, those guys feel comfortable taking 4 or 5 threes. Like, right. You mentioned McMahon, when KD starts taking 10, 12, 14, that's when his line starts to get more inefficient. And that, if you can get, you know, Terrence Ross went 2 for 6, Landry Shamet goes 5 for 8. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, those guys start knocking down threes, it's just a massive swing in Phoenix's favor if they're able to have that at all.
They're going to be there for them too, because, you know, they're throwing 2 guys, especially at Booker. They're trying, like, you're not just going to let Booker go one-on-one all game long. So those threes are going to be there for those guys. And that's why, you know, Torrey Craig is basically not playing in this series, because they've valued, like, and Ross and Shamet have, you know, they've been in and out of the mix, but they need them to hit those backside butt naked wide open threes.
Okay, so we're going to have this discussion, and we talk about the Celtics Sixers series that Bontemps and I are covering. But I'm going to have it here too. What's your belief level that the Suns can take Game 5?
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. call or click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Honestly, it's not real high. I think that, you know, the old thing of the role players play is significantly better at home. I don't know that this translates to Denver. I do think that the Nuggets role players will play significantly better. The altitude is a thing. I mean, there's a reason that the Nuggets, do they have the best home court record in the league? If not, it was like one or two.
Second, but to
Memphis. There you go. Right. But, you know, I mean, it's awfully tough to win games there. Obviously, if you have KD and Booker, you're going to have a chance in any game, but it's a monumental challenge.
To win a game five on the road, and we're going to, like you said, we'll talk about this with the Sixers-Celtics game two. You need to have special players who can do special things. And Devin Booker in particular right now is a special player doing special things. I think Denver is going to win the series. I think they're going to win game five. I think the playing every other day with the amount of minutes in particular that KD's having to play is going to catch up with him as the series goes along. But yes, my confidence level, it's like a 52-48 because Denver's been awesome. I think Denver's going to win, but as somebody who thought the series was over after two games and didn't think that they could pull this off, you look at the way Devin Booker is playing right now in particular, I don't know how you could say you don't have faith that he could pull something off. Cause I mean, he's making everything.
It's not just the shot making. He is all around unbelievable throughout these playoffs. 20 assists in the last two games when, the point guard is sidelined by a strained groin. Not sure at 38 he's coming back in this series. You got to assume those duties. Okay, boom. Here's 20 assists in two games where he's scoring. Booker
36 and 12 assists on 36 and 12 assists on 14-for-18 shooting is just bonkers. It's just bonkers.
And he's been good crazy. Defensively. All
awesome.
Playoffs too.
Awesome defense.
Booker played on the ball a little bit last series too. I wrote a piece that ran 2 days ago about how great Booker's been and that was before this one. Okay. All right. So Bontemps and I got to see an overtime game this afternoon in Philly. Very interesting set of circumstances down the stretch in this game. Primarily, and I don't want to boil it down to one play, but the defining play of this game, Boston has taken a 2-point lead. There's 38 seconds left. Philly has a timeout. They run a play where they put Joel Embiid and James Harden on the same side of the floor. Mm-hmm. Now, Bontemps, have Embiid and Harden scored more points in a game this year combined? Maybe when one of them had like 50 and the other. But have they both scored over 30 in a game this year?
I'm sure they have. I don't know. Okay. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure they have.
Well, this is one of the best performances the two of them have had combined, during the season. It wasn't the greatest Embiid game, but it was he got it done. And then Harden, after going 5-of-28 shooting in games 2 and 3 combined, he just was so much more focused and so much more looking for his shot and scored. I think he had 18 points in the first half or something, maybe 21 points in the first half. He got off to a great start. And you could just see his confidence grow. And we'll talk about why I think that happened in a second. But Doc Rivers drew up a play where he put Harden and Embiid on one side of the floor and stretched everybody else over to the other side. And it confused the Celtics a little bit because they were expecting something else to run. Because long story short, I won't get into all the X's and O's. You can go to someone more smart than me. But Jason Tatum was on Joel Embiid. And that wasn't like, there's no way that's the way they wanted it to be. If it is, I'd be surprised.
Well, but I'll actually push back. That's exactly the way they wanted it to be, because the Celtics all game long were pre-switching every action. So they were comfortable with whoever was going to guard him on that possession. That, and Doc Rivers, to his credit, took advantage of that because he got the matchup he wanted, which was Joel Embiid being guarded by Jason Tatum. And that's both because of how the Celtics were guarding the Sixers, and it was because of the personnel that Joe Mazzulla had on the court and didn't have on the court in some instances.
Okay. I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what happened. Was Tatum began guarding Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris sort of ran through and Embiid sort of set a flash screen and they switched.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I don't know the tendencies. I wish I could tell you I knew exactly what the Sixers and Celtics were saying in their huddle. I'd be surprised if that's what they wanted. Obviously, when you issue the edict that you're going to switch all screens in a scramble situation like that, you have to be comfortable with anybody on the court ending up on Embiid. I understand what you're saying, but I can't believe that's what they thought was going to happen.
That's what they did.
But that's immaterial. Let's move on from that.
But the problem was, hey, you know what? If Embiid scores, hey, it's a tie game. You can live with that.
So anyway,
you can't live with is a three. It makes sense. Embiid's got a mismatch. Got to come down to help. It's a wide open three.
I don't know much about basketball X's and O's, but I do know that when you are up 2 points and you have a three-pointer guy standing in the corner, mm-hmm. you do not leave him.
Well, let's go back to game four of Grizzlies Lakers that McMahon was at. When LeBron James drove down the lane, you had Dylan Brooks and Desmond Bane on the strong side corner. What did they do? They stayed on their guys because they didn't want to give up a three.
They didn't follow the game plan.
Well, I mean, that's what held them there, though, was it was a 2-point game and they like said, do we come or not? Right. They hesitated because of that. I'm just saying.
Well, anyway,
that's the push and pull.
Jaylen Brown, who has been the Celtics' best player in this series, and has been terrific at both ends. And one of the significant factors early in the game that I thought Jaylen Brown got a very cheap, questionable foul about 80 seconds into this game. It was basically the first whistle of the game. It happened right in front of us on the court. I don't know if I would call it a Tobias Harris flop, but Tobias basically fell down.
He just tripped and they called a foul because he kind of bumped into Jaylen Brown.
Was it Ishbia-esque?
No, it was just an accident. It was an accidental stroke of luck for Tobias. He just tripped and they called a foul.
And so then when Jaylen Brown got called for a legitimate foul a minute or two later, all of a sudden he had two fouls. They didn't want him to come out of the game so early in the game. So they took him off of James Harden. One of the big reasons why James Harden is ineffective in games 2 and 3 was not the only reason, but one of the big reasons was Jaylen was up in him and he was bigger and stronger than most players who defend him during the year. And that's not me talking. That is what Doc Rivers said before this game, is that he was having trouble with that. Now the Sixers had some game plan stuff planned where they were going to do kind of double picks to try to do anything that they could to get Jaylen Brown off of him. And in fact, later on in the game, the Celtics were putting Jaylen Brown on other players to try to prepare for screens. But forget about all that. Jaylen Brown was playing awesome, okay? And in that last second up to, he left Harden in the corner.
Yeah.
And he actually came over and made a very, very good, aggressive, late, very textbook double team on Embiid with Tatum to basically block his shot, block his path to getting a good, clean look. The problem was, as soon as Embiid saw that Jaylen Brown helped, I don't even know if he even saw exactly where Harden was. He flipped that pass over there. Harden catch and shoot. I know a catch and shoot is not his game, but he was hot in this game. And bam, from Stats Williams, coming into this postseason. Coming to this series. He was 1 of 10. Harden was 1 of 10 in his playoff career. In 3-point attempts in the last 30 seconds to go ahead. He's 2 for 2 in this series, the two wins.
That's a hell of a
stat. And so that sort of, underlines what sort of series this has gone and how Harden is done. He has 2 40-point games and they're 2-0 in those games.
Well, it's simplifying, oversimplifying, but Harden has been awesome twice. They've won those games and awful twice. They've lost those games.
That's true. And Jaylen, by the way, Jaylen, after the game, immediately stepped up and took accountability and said, I screwed up. Yeah. And there was a lot more that happened, including Bontemps, the two possessions that the Celtics had, one at the end of regulation and one at the end of overtime, where they just ended up with Marcus Smart threes and he missed them both. And if he made one of them, actually he made one, but it was late.
Yeah, but so on that one, what did Tatum say about that? Because I think Tatum's got to get a shot there. Like, so, especially he started slow, but he was, you know, he got rolling in that game. I don't know what he missed, his first 7, 8, 9 shots, but he ends up 9 of 20. So he'd gotten rolling. He's got to get a shot up.
He missed his first 8 shots. Bontemps and I talked about this at length on the drive up. I watched the replay a bunch of times on the last play of the game where he gets the ball to Marcus Smart, but it just Smart doesn't get it off in time. They started the possession with 18 seconds and 2 timeouts, and they elected not to call timeout. And what Tatum said was, look, last year, one of our plays of the year was, remember that first playoff game against Brooklyn last year, where they just ran like through a bunch of different options in their offense and it led to a Tatum dunk, like right at the buzzer, like it went in split before the buzzer. He goes, Tatum goes, we didn't call timeout then. You know, everybody thought it was great. He goes, this is what we do. And I watched that play over and over to see if he could have taken a shot. He drove in from the left wing and Bede was kind of there. You know,
he wasn't actually. Here's what he said. I waited a second too late when they came and doubled. When Embiid came over, I tried to kick it out, but I probably should have went and probably dribbled it to her.
When Embiid came over?
Yeah, he tried to kick it out. He should have just stopped and taken a 10-footer over Tyrese Maxey. Well, he did not do that.
He is 6'10", and he was being guarded by a 6'10".
Didn't shoot over Tyrese Maxey with 30 seconds to go in game one when Malcolm Brogdon threw the pick six to Maxey in that situation.
Yes, it was similar to that play in game one where they didn't, when it was a little bit of a hot potato situation. But look, he, before Harden hit the three that won the game, Tatum hit a three to give them the lead with 38 seconds left.
That's fine. They waited way too long and he should have taken a shot and didn't. And then, so they didn't get a shot. This isn't really up for debate.
Mazzulla is under Joe Mazzulla, who has been kind of defiant about, you know, adjustments. He is really
The timeout thing has been a thing in Boston all year because he's a first time head coach, and all year long there's been all this running commentary on Joe Mazzulla not calling timeouts. More frankly, I've thought most of it is stupid. I don't really think it's really that relevant most of the time. And I thought in these situations, I typically like at the end of the games when teams don't call timeout because defenses don't get a chance to set up. They don't get to sub guys out. You have guys like Tyrese Maxey on the court, for example, who aren't very good defenders and you can't attack because they're smaller players. And, you know, I thought that part of it was fine. The bigger issue I had, especially with the second one, was they just waited far too long. Philly had no timeouts. The Celtics had 2. You've got to come down and immediately attack with 18 seconds to go.
This is what Jackson is saying in our group chat here. He's like, well, what if you're down 2? How do you wait to the end? And that's of course true. If you're down 2, you can't wait till the buzzer to shoot. You've got to give yourself an opportunity for an offensive rebound. I mean, that's basketball 101.
Right.
And that's on Tatum. That's on Tatum.
Wendy, how sick are you of Bontemps at this point?
Bontemps, here's the thing about Bontemps that's remarkable. So the last 2 nights, you know, we've been ahead of your game. So our game is taking place and then your game's taking place. And Bontemps, he's in the press room and he's watching the game. He's like, he's on his computer watching the Suns game. And he's reacting as if we're all watching it. You know, he'll be like, oh, ooh, ooh, why did he do that? But, you know, we're not all watching it. So it is a, you know, that is interesting that he plays that way. But he was nice enough to drive me up to New York City tonight. So I was able to get up here.
AirPods for that?
Well, we were having debates.
We had the Suns game on the car. I
was watching the Suns, but in trying to give him play by play, he didn't always accept the play by play and wanted to watch. And so I felt like I had to turn it away so we would watch the road because I-95 on Sunday nights gets a little interesting.
Brian was very nervous on I-95, but we made it just fine.
Yeah. Well, I think the Greg Popovich term appropriate fear was
There were a lot of cars flying by at very fast speeds, but we got here okay.
Anyway, so the Celtics, you know, in this game, Joel Embiid, Doc Rivers kind of rolled the dice in this game. You know, they were ahead by, I think, as many as 16 points. They were controlling the game largely because of how well Harden was playing. And Embiid, obviously, they both scored over 30. And he left his starters out there a little longer, and they ran out of gas. And Boston was hard charging in the fourth quarter. They were more well-rested. They were getting stops. The 76ers were like, they were having possessions where they were getting down the court. They weren't even getting into like their, I wouldn't even call it a set. They weren't even getting to where they were going to stop at till there was 14 or 12 on the clock. And then there were,
we have a mutual friend who is, who's correctly calling it prevent offense for the final few minutes of the game.
Yeah. Where Joel would just literally one time there was a shot clock violation, and I'm fairly certain Harden dribbled it for the entire 24 seconds. And there was a couple other times where Embiid got the ball and just didn't do anything. He just sort of stood there, and the Celtics almost pulled it out. And I got to tell you, this was the, I want to say the, like about 21st or 22nd Celtics playoff game I've covered the last 2 years. They've lost, you know, a handful, eight of them. I don't know, 8, 9 of them. I don't know how many they've lost. Most of their playoff losses, they can kick them. They can really say, we let this one go. And this one qualifies. They were up five
with 2 minutes to go. Yeah. Like, they got to win that game. They have to, especially against a Sixer team where Joel Embiid, he's coming back from this knee injury. Obviously, he didn't play very well by his standards. He still had 34 and 14. But he admitted
he didn't play well.
Well, no, he didn't play well, for sure. Doc Rivers brought him in with 9 minutes to go in the game because the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, Philly couldn't score. And he was gassed. I mean, the big fella with his hands around his knees every time there was a stoppage. At one point, P.J. Tucker went over and basically screamed at him to snap out of it and get going.
Al Horford stoned Embiid 3 times in the fourth quarter.
In the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Straight blocks. Straight man-on-man blocks. Not Robert Williams coming in like a pterodactyl in the weak side. Straight one-on-one, I'm putting my hand up and rejecting you blocks because Embiid couldn't jump.
Well, Tatum also came right over the top and got a huge offensive rebound. Tatum did not shoot the ball well early in the game. He had a good second half, but he had 18, 19 rebounds, was all over the place, was doing a lot of stuff. He came skying in for an offensive rebound over Embiid when, again, he couldn't jump. And for all the talk about James Harden the last couple games, going 5-for-28 from the field, his worst two-game stint in either the regular season or the playoffs, of his entire career shooting the ball. Joel Embiid is lucky James Harden bailed him out today, because if they had lost this game and gone down 3-1 at home, I know the big fellow just got MVP a couple days ago, but this would have been all about the big fellow having juice down the stretch.
His stat line was good, but his game wasn't. And if you watched
Line, like 11 of 26 is not a good stat line.
Well, he had a really good first 2.5 quarters. And then he got tired. And I mean, again, some of it's understandable. The guy's playing on a sprained knee. He missed 2 weeks. He's working his way back into shape. But, you know, this is, as we talk all the time, this is a results business, and the results in the playoffs are what they are. And if they'd lost this game on him not having energy down the stretch, you better believe that's what people would have been talking about tomorrow. Instead, they're talking about James Harden stepping up and making massive, massive plays. And, you know, we got ourselves a series.
So that's the thing. So now let's ask ourselves the question about our confidence level that Philadelphia can win on the road in Boston in game 5. So, you know, you can make the argument. So game two was lopsided in the Celtics' favor. Game 3, it came down to the fourth quarter, but the Celtics pulled away. It wasn't down in the last seconds. And then games 1 and 4, basically both times, the Sixers won on Harden three-pointers in the last 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you would hear that and say, well, the Celtics are, you know, a couple of bounces away from possibly having swept. And so you'd say, well, the Celtics should win. And I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I believe the Celtics are the better team. I don't think that's a hot take.
Yeah.
But they have now messed around here. And they have opened the door for a big Embiid game. Now, I can't sit here and tell you that I expect that, because he has the sprained knee. He's playing a lot of minutes. I think one of the reasons why he wore out, in addition to the extra minutes, is that they had a game on Friday night and another game on Sunday afternoon. But they have opened the door for Embiid to drop a masterpiece, which we know he can do, and put them on the ropes. And they've done that by letting this game go. I know that they were behind for most of it, but they had the game in control. And so, so many times these game fives when 2-2, I mean, game fives, when it's 2-2, have kind of defined LeBron's career. He's had some of his best games in those moments and some of his worst. Has been a long time since he's had a bad one. The Celtics have put themselves in a bit of an uncomfortable situation. Round. What's that?
All the way since the first round.
Right. Well, I that wasn't a 2-2.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, look, let's go back to the conversation we had earlier, right? Talking about the Suns. They got Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Those are guys that you're in a one-game situation. Those are guys who can get something done. We'll see if James Harden can do it again. He's already done it twice in this series. Joel Embiid just won MVP. This is a guy who put up 52 and 13 on the Celtics. This is a guy who's had 26 points out of 27. His team scored in a quarter that I've watched this season, scored 59 against Utah. Like, this is a guy who is a special player who can do special things. And this is a guy who for a long time has been waiting for an opportunity like this. Now, we'll see it physically where how he's feeling on Tuesday. We'll see where his energy's at. It is going to be an extra half a day. He had, you know, day and a half basically to this game. Essentially going to be 2.5 for game five, so he should be ready to go. And, you know, I mean, it's a huge opportunity. Because, right, I think everybody looking at this series pretty realistically, I think Boston's the best team left in the playoffs and should win the next three series. But we have seen the Celtics time and again mess around and throw the ball away and miss opportunities and open the door. And, you know, Joel is good enough to potentially carry these guys home if he can have a special game on Tuesday.
Yeah, and he needs to answer the bell. Harden's gotten them two wins. Like, Harden has delivered in the series. You know, a guy who there's been so much criticism and scrutiny on, you know, some of his past playoff performances, disappointments. Even though he's had two terrible games in the series, he has delivered. He has held up his end because he's had two just absolute, you know, phenomenal performances. They need the MVP to have that kind of night to be able to pull off an upset in this series against a, you know, team that has home court advantage.
But by the way, Harden has now had 4 40-point games in the playoffs after shooting under 25% the game before, which is he's the only person ever to do that, which I think sort of sums up the James Harden, not only the James Harden postseason experience, but the James Harden Eastern Conference semifinal playoff experience, which has just been an absolute wild roller coaster. And God bless him. I mean, at the end of the regulation, I mean, it's sort of been forgotten, but when Philly had nothing going, he gets in the lane and makes a really difficult runner to tie the game.
Yes, that's right. We didn't talk about that at all. Yeah.
And then comes back in overtime and hits this massive shot in the corner. And, you know, the other thing too, this Philly team is really tough, which is not something you could say about the Sixers in past years. This is a team that we saw in that Atlanta series. They folded like a cheap suit a bunch of times and losing that series. They got, you know, knocked out of the playoffs last year by Miami. It was a similar thing.
Well, Doc these brought guys, that up.
These guys aren't as good as the Celtics, probably. They might be better than everybody else, but they're probably not as good as Boston. But they are really tough. And they have shown this season that they can come back and take a punch and come back and fight some more. And that served them well in this game. And, you know, if they are going to get a couple more wins in the series, they're going to need more of it. But
hey, they can.
This team wouldn't have come back from down 5 with 2 minutes to go
Doc did bring up the difference between that Miami series and this series, and he said one name, PJ Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
PJ Tucker went from Miami to Philly, and he's made a big difference. And he had a couple of huge plays in this game, including a putback.
PJ Tucker was the final piece to the Bucks title puzzle.
Yep,
for sure. Well, Tobias Harris shot an air ball and ended up in PJ Tucker's hands, and he made a 3-point play that was one of the key plays in the game as the Sixers came back from being down in that 2-minute stretch.
Well, and he also went, like I said earlier, he also went and lit up Embiid on the court in front of everybody in the fourth quarter. And like there are not a lot of people that can do that, that can go
after
up to
making
like
the
Joel Embiid and
after
that.
Making the and one before it was a really important free throw I needed to take to tie the game. But before he did that, he went over there and barked in Embiid's ear, like, stop getting blocked by Al Horford.
Yeah.
It's basically
like,
what he's,
this
what
guy,
he said.
This guy is unguardable. You go back to being unguardable and stop letting this guy slow you down.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right, one more story on this one before we move on real quick. So apparently on the way to the game on Sunday afternoon, Doc Rivers sent James Harden a song via text and said, I want, you know, this is, you know, this was your inspiration. And it was a 7-minute long gospel song. And Bontemps and I played it in his car.
First time gospel's ever been played in Bontemps' ride.
Well, it didn't last very long. It was almost unlistenable, with all due respect to the artist, much less 7 minutes. And Harden said he get the text when he's, and he said, I don't know who was in the car. I mean, his buddy, little baby.
Yes.
He was at the game. I'm not sure.
I think that's one of those, one of the guys who's helping him get ready for his last Rockets training game, or the last one. Birthday party in Atlanta.
Yes. Anyway, I'm not saying he was with them, but, you know, apparently James was in his car, quote, with my homies. I don't know who that was. Okay.
You weren't there?
He's like, let me see what, I wasn't there. So let me see what Doc sent me. He grabbed the aux cable. I know he doesn't actually have an aux cable, but, and he played it apparently in the car on the way there. And I just can't imagine these dudes listening to this. But hey, listen, this is what Doc decided to do to motivate him.
Listen, it's an 8-minute song, and James said he listened to the whole thing. So, you know,
I guess
song's called You Know My Name. The whole point was get back to being James Harden again.
Listen, if Lil Baby was there, there might be a remix coming out.
Hey, listen, that would be appreciated.
Him and Meek could do one together.
Travis Scott, get all James homies involved here.
Sure.
Right. The Harden section of the courtside seats was enjoying itself on this day.
I would imagine.
And they should have.
A lot more than they were on Friday, that's for sure.
That's right. Before we go, I want to touch on the game fours that are going to be on Monday night. I would just say I feel the same way. If I was talking to Knicks fans or Warriors fans, I would tell them both the same thing. You get home 2-2, you're okay. get home 2-2.
Mm-hmm. You advise them to win this game?
That's my veteran. I know that looks a little bleak for the Knicks right now. Jimmy's back. They do not seem to be playing well. Randall and Brunson both played bad in game three. They get home 2-2. Home court. They're going to be all right. And I'll say the same thing about the Warriors. I almost want to say whoever wins that Warriors-Lakers game four is going to win the series. Not quite ready to say that.
And I'll say it. I think that's how it's going to go.
Wendy is ready to take his victory lap on the top six roster in the West. I know that.
Bontemps is not willing to allow it. He's still fighting me on that. In fact, I'm not even going to bring it up to him anymore because it fires him up. I'm just going to leave it alone.
I mean, yeah, listen, it's been proven
zero
right.
Chance they're going to leave it alone.
There's only four teams left, and they're one of them, and they're up in their series. So I think I think we're going to have to go ahead and concede defeat on that one, Bontemps.
Well, listen, the Lakers have been very impressive in the playoffs, and the situation remains the same. If AD is the best player on the court, they can win. Like, I would that's say what it comes down to.
Not necessarily even the best player on the court. If AD plays well, honestly, AD has had, we're talking about like Harden has alternated between awesome and awful in this series. AD offensively defensively, he's been a monster all playoffs long. Offensively, though, it's kind of been a similar deal. He's had some just dominant performances and he's had some duds.
Well, he's been the best player on the court in two out of three games and they've won the two games. Like that's the barometer. He's got to be, I mean, you know, Saturday night, he had 25 and 13 and what, four blocks, three steals, three assists. That's seven for 10 from the field, 11 for 12 from the line. Like dominant.
I would say the only reason he doesn't have to be the best is because LeBron, even in a game that has this kind of star power, LeBron is still capable of being the best player.
That's fair. But if AD's got whatever LeBron is doing, their chance of winning comes down to AD playing like that.
Yeah.
In game two, he had 11 points and was invisible. So he's got to be like that. And if he's like that, this team can keep winning games against the Warriors. But that's what
two things about that series. Two things about that series. One, D'Angelo Russell is playing well. And when D'Angelo Russell is playing well, things are great for the Lakers. He doesn't always, though. He's a high variance player, and he's feeling himself right now.
Oh, yeah.
Second thing is the chess
Take
match.
That, Timberwolves.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that one alone. The chess match with Curry has been interesting. The Lakers in game one were doing heavy ball denial. Trying to stand on his toes. So the Warriors made an adjustment in game two, put him on the ball. The Lakers would often trap him when he would come down and go into a pick and roll, put two guys on him. And then Curry would sort of give it to another player who sometimes it was to Draymond, who was often setting the screens. And so then if Curry was trapped and he gets rid of the ball, now it's 4-on-3, basic math. And then he was also getting the ball to Clay, who was hitting the shots. Mm-hmm. So in game three, Darvin Ham made a pretty basic change. He put Jared Vanderbilt, who had been on Curry quite a bit, he put him on Draymond Green. And he put Austin Reeves on Steph Curry. Now, normally you would say, well, man, Steph Curry, a toast Austin Reeves. Actually, Austin Reeves is a pretty good competitor and has decent size. But so now when they would come up and have Draymond Green set the screens, they would just switch it. And now they get Vanderbilt on him, which is a matchup that they like, and they don't have to worry about Vanderbilt getting caught up in screens. And it kind of messed him up. There's, you know, a lot of other things that were going on there, AD playing a lot better, but the chess match with Curry has been interesting. And so now the ball's in Steve Kerr's court to see what he does back. And the thing about Curry is he's so malleable. He can do so many different things that it gives you a lot of options. So that's one of the things that you watch for in game four.
Yeah. I mean, the Warriors shot 13-44 from three, had 19 turnovers, and they continued with this idiocy of starting Jamichael Green. So assuming they get away from doing that.
Well, game worked out brilliantly and it was a big catalyst in their win.
Look, I think Steve Kerr is a hell of a coach. He's one of the best coaches of all time, but
you just called him an idiot.
Well, one of the things he does that I think is crazy is he will do this things with lineups where if they win a game, he will keep doing it no matter what until they lose again. Like when he had Draymond Green not starting for three games because they won the first game without him. So let's just keep doing this. And then they end up getting obliterated at home in game six and like, oh, now we're going to go back to the great lineup in game seven. It's like, okay, I'm glad we got back to this point now. The other thing, too, for Golden State, Jordan Poole has been horrific in these playoffs. And at some point, these guys have to decide, like, if I don't even know if they can play him at this point.
Whoa. Let alone
play him 25 minutes.
What's that contract?
140.
Not great. I mean, I'm sure they're going to keep rolling him out there. But, like, even the other night, he played 22 minutes, was 2 for 9, was 0 for 4 from 3. Like, he has just been abysmal.
He did have a good game in game 3 or game 2. He made a bunch of threes.
He made some shots. I mean, actually, it was game 1 when they lost. He went 6 for 11 from 3. But he was 1 for 4 on 2s. In game 2, he barely played. And then he went 3 for 6. Like, he's been a non-factor. And I think they got to try to limit his minutes as much as possible.
He has had an awful playoffs. I'm looking at his stats now. Guy's shooting 28.8% from 3, 35.5% from the field.
Just brutal.
Averaging 11.6 points. And this is a guy, if he's not scoring, he's really not he doesn't do a whole lot else that impacts winning.
It's rough.
Let's be honest. At this point, that contract looks pretty dicey. I don't know they had a whole lot of choice in the matter, especially given the events that played out just before those negotiations picked up. But,
well, let me say this about Jordan Poole. He's very streaky, and he can make you forget about it all in one game. So,
well, he was pretty rough in the playoffs last year, too. And as they went on, he got sort of, I mean, he played better than this, but when they were playing against Boston, like, he was not much of a factor in that series because he couldn't really stay out there in those situations. But to your point,
I mean, last year's his playoff percentage were 51-39. Those are pretty good.
He shot the ball. He played much, much, much better in those playoffs. But when they got down to the end, when they were playing Boston, he was playing like 16, 17 minutes a game because they were just attacking him over and over defensively. And to your point, though, Brian, he's a lot like D'Angelo Russell. And D'Angelo Russell could go back to being a pumpkin in game 4, and Jordan Poole could hit 6 threes like he did in game 1. Like, that's, you know, those guys are very similar at both ends. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right, but before we go, let's touch on the Knicks Heat real quick. The Knicks absolutely could not buy a jump shot in game 3.
They haven't been able to hit shots all playoffs. It's been sort of wild.
I felt that the Heat definitely came out with a much more aggressive mindset to rebound the ball, because that's one of the Knicks' big strengths. And it was a big factor in game 2 when they evened up the series without Jimmy Butler. And Bam Adebayo, who kind of comes and goes in terms of rebounding, he was absolutely just fighting. And it led to some frustration. That, you know, it led to some pushing and shoving. And there was a bunch of loose ball fouls that were called and many more that could have been called. And I thought that the Heat really took the fight to the Knicks. I think the rebounds were roughly even, maybe one team had a couple more, but you know, the Knicks are used to winning and if not dominating the boards, and that didn't happen. And then, you know, Jimmy wasn't great, but he was productive, and Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle, quite frankly, weren't productive.
Yeah.
And I know that they're both dinged up, you know, both dealing with ankle injuries. Brunson's got a hand injury. I'm not saying that everything's a-okay, but you know, if you're not going to get great games from Brunson and Randle, and you're not going to hit outside shots, and you're not going to win the boards or at least be very close to winning it, you're going to lose if you're the Knicks. And that's what happened in game 3. But they were able to generate open shots. A lot of those looks were really clean. Well, it wasn't like the Heat were smothering them.
The Knicks in the playoffs have hit 27.8% of their threes. That is by far the worst of any team. Sacramento is second at over 30%. Nobody else is under 32%. So, I mean, they're averaging 9 for 33 from 3 every game. It's kind of remarkable they're in the second round if they're shooting like that. Miami, meanwhile, is 27th in the league in 3-point shooting.
They didn't play the best first-round teams. So.
Well, that's fair. They're going to
cancel your radio show in Cleveland, buddy.
Well, I'm just telling it like it is.
Well, in Miami, by the way, was 27th in 3-point shooting in a regular season, and they're second in the playoffs, hitting 39% of their threes, hitting 14 for 36. Like, if the Knicks give up 15 points a game from the 3-point line on top of the other issues, then they're going to be in huge trouble. Like, they're due to hit shots. We'll see if they can hit some shots. Emmanuel Quickley finally had a better game in game 3, and then he hurt his ankle. So we'll see if he's going to be able to do anything in game 4.
That was a worrisome, that getting rolled up from behind is not a good thing. It didn't totally collapse down on his ankle, but it was, you know, it was not good to see.
It was not great.
Hobble away.
It was not great. But they got to hit some shots. I mean, they just got to hit some shots. They're due to have a good shooting game. If they don't get one, like you said, it's going to be very hard for them to win that game.
Yeah. And so my guess would be, I don't know, of course, but my guess would be that Butler would get stronger as the series goes along. Although he did, man, he turned his, you know, in the game where he got hurt in game 1, he turned his ankle outward, the conventional ankle turn where you roll it outward. Then in game 3, he went in for a drive and he rolled his ankle inward, same right ankle. So I don't know, man. I mean, he was
should even things out job, according to my math.
And right. And then, during the game, Eric Spoelstra had the in-game interview and he said, oh yeah, Jimmy hurt his thigh. And then after the game, it was asked for a follow-up and he's like, oh, I misspoke. He didn't hurt his thigh. So I don't know what we believe there. So I don't know, but,
probably not that, probably not that he's fine.
Yeah.
So I know Jimmy will be out there. So, you know, the Knicks got to hit some shots if they're going to stay alive here. If they go down 3-1, I don't think they're beating Heat 3 in a row. But if they're 2-2, hey, Garden's a hard place to play. They can get hot. They're due to make some shots. I think they're very much still in it. And I know that's not exactly a hot take when you're playing an 8 seed, but the Lakers aren't really a 7 and the Heat aren't really an 8. That's just the way it is for this playoffs. So, all right. Well, thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to McMahon for, I know you still got a lot of work to do there. Thank you to Jackson for staying up late. And thank you to Bontemps for his contributions and for chauffeuring me back from Philadelphia.
Adios,
amigos. Here for.
Try it again, McMahon.
Adios, amigos, and also Bontemps.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.